The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the K4Wins, K4Wins.com, also on the X format at K4Winners. We give you about 67%, 68%, 60% winners for the last year and a half. Get ready for college football season coming up here in just a few weeks. We, of course, got the big game in Dublin. We're going to be jumping into the Big 12 a little bit later on during the show. Major League Baseball as well. And what is a kiss? Not just a kiss. We'll talk about the potential $34 million kiss in the National Football League. Before we do that, though, Kip Kiever below us does fantastic work. The executive director, of course, the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, recently taken over by the Porch Creek Indians. We'll be in Aruba next summer doing our show out there, hopefully for the entire summer.
For the entire summer now? It was a week or two.
Couple days. Now it's June, July, August, I think.
Okay.
Aruba is not a place where you should go for like 3 or 4 days. It really takes some time to get to know the place.
Okay, well, that's duly noted.
I'll never forget when they have a wonderful, they have several wonderful new beaches down there. And I was down there with my wife on our second, I surprised her with a second honeymoon on our third anniversary. And went down there, and I had absolutely no problem with her going topless if that's what she wanted to do. And I wanted to go totally naked. And I said, is there a problem with me going bottomless? And he looked at me, he said, there's a problem with you going bottomless. She can do whatever she wants. And I said, okay. So I didn't get a chance to go bottomless with Maru, but I was actually looking forward to that. So we'll have to be careful how we deal with that once we get down there. And also, of course, Kai Gregory, who's the man's been handicapping for years and years and years on both sides of the ledger, Las Vegas King. He's been doing it all. Of course, he's got his own place going on here for K4 Wins as well. Gentlemen, I hope you guys are doing well. We're going to dive into a bunch of good stuff here as we get ready for college football season. How are we all doing?
As long as I don't have to partake in the nude beach, I'm doing great.
Well, the other thing about the nude beach is everyone thinks you're going to like what you see. For the most part, you can't even really recognize whether it's a male or female until they get right up on you. And by that time, it's too late. So it's not what it's
all. Not a nude beach I want to go to.
No, it's not always what it's cracked up to be. We're going to get into some Big 12. I think of all the conferences out there, we talked about the ACC last week. For a conference that was really down, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what the conference can do. The Big 12 is really interesting. I just think there's a lot of different teams, including, of course, K-State, Arizona State, Texas Tech went transfer U on us. Utah, I think there's another team that I think could be really good, and no one's talking about that being TCU. We'll talk about that coming up. But it should be really interesting to look at the Big 12. Kip, you know, we did a show back in the old days of terrestrial radio, and I never forget it. I remember we compared the Big 12 to the SEC. We went team by team to see who is the stronger conference. And that about that time was when the SEC kind of went off in their own way. The Big 12 just fell apart. But the Big 12 may have something to say about the 12 playoff spots this year. I have a feeling.
Well, the Big 12, of course, surrendered Texas and Oklahoma. That kind of changed the dynamic because – you know, no matter what your feelings are about those two programs, for them to shift to the SEC, you know, you can have this great reorganization. And what the Big 12 did in reaction, of course, was to basically gather up all the teams from all over the country. So there's no geographic integrity in the Big 12. They have schools ranging from Orlando, Florida, all the way out to Provo, Utah, and everywhere in between. So it's kind of a chaotic situation. There's really the funny thing about the Big 12 is it is a decent league because it is recognizable kind of name brands in the conference. But, you know, still until they develop, and I really want to see Arizona State because I believe they were an aberration. We're playing really well at the end of the year. Their couple of superstar players really stepped up. But I'm not ready to declare Arizona State a marquee team. So I think this is still a conference. Utah was going into the season the closest thing that looked like a team that might be on that level that you could put them as an actual contender for college football playoff glory. But Utah had a terrible year and really fell off with their quarterback Cam Rising being unavailable most of the season. So I just think this is a league with a lot of decent teams, but no really top-notch teams, and that's why it's kind of intriguing, because I have no idea who's going to emerge from this scrum of teams and be their even representatives in the college football playoff, if or maybe just representative like it was last year with Arizona State.
You talk about those teams that the Big 12 went out there and stole. Of course, they went and got the independent BYU, which is part of that, which, again, is just kind of a weird mix-up there. You also think about Arizona State, a team that we talked about last week briefly, picked last in the Big 12. And what do? They end up going all the way to conference championship. And now everyone's expecting them under Kenny Dillingham to have another fantastic year. We'll see what happens. Sam Leavitt, I like that quarterback out there, that scrambler out there. I think he brings some different facets to that running game that we haven't seen with Arizona State in quite some time. And you're right, they did play very, very well towards the end of the season, winning their last five games. Another team I think is going to be really interesting, and this will be the first game of the year coming up August 23rd in Dublin, Ireland. Not sure why it's Iowa State and K-State. People outside the United States are calling in. Thanks a lot for that, Dud. For people that love college football, we realize this could be a game that's going to set up the Big 12 and for what happens later on throughout the year. Avery Johnson, the quarterback at Kansas City, had a great season last year. Their 9 wins, they averaged 37.4 points per ball game, and of course, they're also bringing back Dylan Edwards, who averaged 7.4 yards per carry. What's that offense going to look like, K-State? Do you expect them, Kai, to be right there in the mix at the end of the season?
You know, I do. I've got to disagree with Kip a little bit there on Arizona State, though. I mean, they lost Scataboo. I get that. Cam was good. That they did play 5 games. I think they won 5 games by single digits or by one score. But I really like what they've got coming back. Keep in mind their last 2 games, including the play, and they lost. Their leading wide receiver was out, which completely changed everything for Leavitt as their quarterback. I like him. I like what their coach is doing there. I think although there's some pretty good projections for them, I think they could be a surprise team again and get to 10 wins, believe it or not. As far as Kansas State, just count me as a huge fan of Kleeman, the head coach. Count me as a huge fan of Avery Johnson. I know he makes some boneheaded plays from time to time, but I love what he's doing. The running game they've got going there. Kansas State returns about 67% of their net production, including 83% on defense, which has been, one of their staples. They were a little bit lower on the defensive side of the ball last year than I think they will be this year. But K-State loves ball control game, and it keeps them in every game they're playing. I've already put it out there. I love Kansas State in Ireland. I like them -3. I like them on the money line -50. I think even though I am, on Iowa State and their 61% returning production, I really think Kansas State controls that game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think Kansas State wins, that game by between 4 and 8 points.
All right, we're knee deep. Kip, let's get into it. Let's talk some more Big 12. What are the teams out of the Big 12? If you've been doing some reps throughout the college football offseason here, if you want to call it an offseason, getting ready for the Big 12 season, what are the teams are kind of rearing your eyebrows a little bit, rearing your ears?
Let me start and expound on my Arizona State thoughts, because I think Arizona State last year really benefited from obscurity. Nobody expected anything. They didn't probably expect very much of themselves. I think Dillingham did a fabulous job, and we've been talking about top flight coaches. This is a chance for him to kind of launch officially into that atmosphere if he can repeat. And I don't disagree with Kai in his assessment that they are capable of doing it, but it's a lot different if you have expectations on your shoulders and people are pointing at you as like the favorite in the league, where last year you were picked 18th and last. Now, in some conferences, when you're picked last, it means you're being picked 9th or 10th. They were picked 18th mm-hmm. in an 18-team league last year. I they're just going to have to show me that they're for real. I do know that they've got a lot of weapons coming back and are capable, but I just think it's a whole different atmosphere when you're a team that's expected to be a contender as opposed to being a team that's nobody's paying attention to. the interesting thing is, it's too bad we don't have our other partner on today, Case Kiefer, who's a proud graduate of Rock Chalk Jayhawk at Lawrence, Kansas and Kansas University. But probably the most impactful team in the conference last year was also one of its most disappointing. Kansas down the stretch completely wrecked the playoff hopes for BYU and primetime Deion Sanders by just blowing those teams. They completely impacted the conference down the stretch with about a 3 or 4 game run before they lost their last game. But they've got their quarterback back as well. How many quarterbacks, guys, in the last 4 or 5 years in college football have been named Daniels? It seems like is Jeff Daniels, the Hollywood actor, going to be at the controls of a team this year? I mean, it's just unbelievable. You got all these JT Daniels that has played for like 5 different teams. Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy, lighting it up for the Redskins. I know I'm forgetting another one, but you've got another Jalen. I think it's Jalen Daniels at Kansas back again for another season. The Jayhawks are an interesting team, pretty intriguing for me. And you mentioned Tony, Texas Tech, which is now the remake of the Oklahoma State movie. Remember 4 or 5 years ago, Boone Pickens, the big oil man, basically paid for a brand new stadium, bought a bunch of players, was bringing in all this excitement. And, with Gundy, Mike Gundy's still the head coach there. You know, he's a man, he's 40. Well, that was about 10 years ago. He's a failure and he's 50 because Oklahoma State last year was in the top 20 preseason poll. They didn't win a single game in the conference last year. So I don't know what they're going to have, but Texas Tech has another oil guy that has gone crazy and bought players from teams all over the country. It's been like a shopping frenzy in Lubbock, Texas. And I got to tell you, I've been through Lubbock. You would have to pay me more than a gazillion dollars to consider playing football in that godforsaken part of the country.
Hey, Tommy Tuberville did.
Yeah. It's in West Texas. There's nothing there but a bunch of those stupid windmill things. I got to tell you guys, if the Red Raiders are a threat this year with their bought team, that's going to be a big story because it didn't work at Oklahoma State. It hasn't worked some other places, but they've gone absolutely berserk with their spending this year. And in all measures, it looks like they're ranked in the top 3 in the country in terms of people assessing what has taken place in the transfer portal. So there's some real intriguing teams in the Big 12. I just think, you really don't know who's going to emerge there because, you know, I see a lot of parity because a lot of these teams are mirror images of each other.
You can spend $20.5 million. We'll see how far they can push the envelope in the Big 12. Yeah, there's one team that no one's talking about in the Big 12 that I love, and we'll go through it real quick. You know, we mentioned K-State, and obviously Avery Johnson, the quarterback, I think he's really good. They had 9 wins. We mentioned they put about 37 points a ballgame up in their wins last season. Dylan Edwards is a running back who was averaging 7.4 yards per carry, and I expect him to come back and have a fantastic year. Arizona State, you mentioned the fact they won their last 5 games. There were some close games. Sammy Leavitt, the scrambler, he's going to be back. Coach Kenny Dillingham, I think, has done a good job there. And really, when you're picked to win 18th, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you just go out there and you say, you lie. Guys, everyone thinks we suck. Let's go out there and play football. And they did. They got it done. Texas Tech is going to be really interesting. They got new players in from Houston, UCLA, Northern Illinois, USC, Miami of Ohio, and Ohio State. They are transfer U, man. I mean, if you don't remember the team last year, you're not going to remember anybody from this football team last year. It seems like every single year they go 7-6. Coach Joey McGuire in his 4th year there at Texas Tech. BYU, quarterback U for years and years and years, and they've got 4 different guys. You still don't know who you're going to be starting the quarterback for this coming up football season for BYU, so that's going to be kind of haphazard. Kyle Whittingham, I think, is doing a great job at Utah. For the short period of time, ranked 121st in turnovers. I remember the Cincinnati Bengals about, 6 or 7 years ago when they swept the division and no one picked them to do anything, and they were like plus 19 in turnover battles. I hate turnover battles because when you look at the plus side, the ball bounces weird. And next thing you know, if it's bouncing your way, it's the difference between winning and losing football games. We know what it means when you win the turnover battle, when you don't. It bit Utah in the ass last year. They started 4-0, and all of a sudden they just fell apart. And, of course, they had four different quarterbacks who were all banged up. The one team I'm looking at, though, this year, and tell me if I'm wrong, they won 9 games last year. But Sonny Dykes has done a fantastic job. There's this kid named Josh Hoover, of course, the quarterback. I believe he had 33 touchdowns last year, threw for 3,700 yards. Andy Avalos is back, a defensive coordinator. He, of course, was thrown out there from Boise State, was given several opportunities to become a head coach this year. He decided to stay for his second year, so he's going to be there. They got 9 starters, a total of 18 guys back on both sides of the ball, 9 on offense and 9 on defense. And while the offense certainly they're saying Josh Hoover is the next Andy Dalton. Now, I don't know what that says. You Cincinnati Bengals fans can probably say, wait a minute, Andy Dalton, hey, listen, he took the Cincinnati Bengals to playoff games. The fiery redhead got it done a little bit. But really, remember some of the numbers Andy Dalton put up at TCU? I mean, shit, it was unbelievable. He set records there in the Big 12. So I really like TCU to have something to say. And you look at their schedule, it's all conference. They're not really – I think they're playing Abilene. Christian. Well,
they do have SMU.
They do have SMU, but I can't find maybe one or two losses on this football team. All their tough games are at home. So I think TCU and Josh Hoover is going to have something to be said about whether TCU ends up making the playoffs there and certainly for a Big 12 championship. Kip, your thoughts?
Yeah. Sonny Dykes won Coach of the Year a couple of years ago. That was quite an accomplishment for a team that lost 63-7 in the national championship game. But they've been kind of lousy since. But like you said, they've been rebuilding. And I'm intrigued with their opener. They are the first opponent for new coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Bill Belichick. That is going to be a very impactful game on opening night. Opening weekend, I should say. If TCU goes to Chapel Hill and spoils the Bill Belichick and his young partner's aspiring new career as a college football coach, I think Jordan Hudson may drop him right away if they lose that game to the Horned Frogs.
Do you think we'd be going to HR if she was in there kissing the players on the head?
It could be. You remember Dan Mullen's wife kissed all the players before the game. I don't know if she's going to – he's back. They're not in the Big 12, which we're talking about today, but a lot of people don't realize Dan Mullen is now head coach at UNLV. So he's back, and the kissing bandit is turned loose in Sin City.
We had those top coaches. We're going to get Kai's top 3 coaches here in a minute. We did ours on the show the last couple of weeks. We have not gotten Kai's. The really interesting thing is you look at some of these top active coaches, Dan Mullen's like in the top 10 in some of these. It's based on what he's done in the past, what he's expected to do in the future. Dan Mullen, there's a guy that, you just can quite, and I always liked Dan. I always thought he was a football player's coach. He had the giant head. He just looked like a football kind of guy. I've gotten a chance to meet him several times at SC Media Days and was always a sweetheart, always a super nice guy. But Dan Mullen, yeah, out there at UNLV. Your top 3 coaches, and again, Kip, give me your top 3 coaches you had. These are active coaches for the college football season coming up. You and I did a little differently. We took 2 coaches that are kind of like no-brainers, and then we took one off the board. But who are your 3?
My 3 were Kirby Smart, Lane Kiffin, and Jeff Brohm, the coach at Louisville, who I think is a real up-and-coming superstar.
I went with Ryan Day. Of course, he's coming off a national championship. I'm going with Dabo Swinney, who I think is going to win the next national championship. And then I went with Jeff Traylor, a guy from the UTSA Roadrunners. And if you're just talking about hiring a guy just for a couple of years, he's already 58 years of old. He was a high school coach there in Texas till he was almost in his mid-50s. He got a late start, but he's a really good coach. Kai, who do you have as your top 3 active coaches? And give me something a little different. I know Legend went off the board and said Nick Saban. I mean, we were getting a little crazy there. But give me your 3 active coaches who hopefully are still coaching now.
They all are, and they are completely different than anything you guys have said. I got some thoughts on this Big 12 thing. But number 3, I've got a tie. And I don't understand why people don't mention this guy more. Because if this guy was at a major college, and he is at a major college, but if he was in the SEC or at a better school than he is, in the Big 12, if he's in a Big 10 school, what could this guy do with talent because what he's done with not much talent at Utah, Kyle Whittingham, what could he do at an actual major university with his? And I have him tied with somebody that he's not having a good, he's not going to be good at Wisconsin, Luke Fickell, because I just don't think Wisconsin's going to be great anytime soon. But I love what he has done, 76 and 38 overall. He did great at Cincinnati. I got those two tied at third of what I would want. At second, I got Chris Kleeman from K-State. I think the world of him. I love what he did in the FCS before moving up. I just think he's a great up and coming coach. I mean, he's not up and coming. It's not like he's 30, but like him. And then number one, as much as it pains me because he wears the wrong shade of orange, and I got Steve Sarkisian. I just like what he has done, and it's too soon to say, you know, is he top of the mountain? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's one of the greatest coaches in the history of the world. But if we're talking about starting a program, development, and what I think they can do, obviously at Texas, you know, they're just buying talent left and right. But I think he's done some great things, and I just like the way he coaches.
Now, according to this ESPN article here, they had Ryan Day number one and your man Josh Heupel number two. I cannot believe, and I know you're a home dog, and I know you pick against Tennessee on purpose. You try to do this reverse psychology shit every single week. Even when you think Tennessee's going to win, you pick against them. I know what you're doing here because I know you like Josh Heupel, and I know you think he's a good coach, and he's done a fantastic job at Tennessee so far. Why would you not have Josh Heupel in your top three?
Heupel's very loyal to his assistant coaches, and I think sometimes he's too loyal. I think he's got a
– It's worked so far.
Has it? What have they won?
They're back. They're back. I mean, Tennessee's back. Tennessee's expected to win now. I mean, when Alabama goes up there and kicks their ass every year, it ain't going to happen anymore.
Well, I mean, if they're back and they hadn't beat Georgia, you know, since 2016 on a Hail Mary. Now, everybody talks about that and they go back to 2016 and go, oh, it was a Hail Mary for Tennessee. They got lucky. Well, it was right after Georgia had a lucky play also where Tennessee's defensive back fell down and Georgia scored with a minute left. So, anyway, I think Tennessee actually dominated that game for the most part. But I digress. So, moving on, which, by the way, that hurt my heart because, I mean, I loved it, but it gave Butch Jones a win. And he is in the top three worst coaches ever to coach football, not only at Tennessee, but anywhere else. Heupel has a lot of good traits. He has Tennessee or has had Tennessee on the right path, if you will.
Starting a program, you wouldn't start a program with Josh Heupel?
He hasn't tinkered his offense enough to move with defenses that have caught up to his offense, in my opinion. I love him. He's Tennessee's coach. You asked for somebody you're going to start a program with. You said top three. Now, he may be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, or 18, but he's not in my top three.
Okay. You mentioned you had a more to add on to the Big 12, Kai.
Nobody's talking about it. I really like this Baylor team. I think they are going to give – probably the most loaded Auburn team in 20 years. I think they're going to give Auburn fits at home. Baylor starts off with Auburn. You know, unfortunately, right after that, they got SMU. And I like Rhett Lashley, but I think Baylor is going to be better on defense, especially up front in the trenches, which is where they lost games last year. But they're going to be better. If that game was at home, I'd take Baylor all day. Then they play Mighty Samford the next week, they're going to win that. See, then the schedule, and a lot of these Big 12, just the schedule is like, wow. Because then they got Arizona State, then they go to Oklahoma State, then they have K-State, at TCU, at Cincinnati, UCF, which should be the bottom feeder, Utah, which I think is going to be much better this year. They're going to have a more stable quarterback. They're going to be better. If they are not in the bottom in turnovers, they have a completely different season last year, you know, in my opinion. I like this. I really, really, really like Utah again, and their schedule is semi-favorable. Then they play Arizona and Houston. Now, I can see Baylor getting in the mix to get to 8, 9, 10 wins.
Big 12, one automatic bid for the Final 12, Kip. That's it, or do they get a second team in?
Well, I mean, they have a chance to get a second team in. They were on the verge of that last year. If Kansas hadn't demolished the teams, there was a three-way tie going into the last two weeks of the season, and two of those three lost. Arizona State's the only one who survived, probably the least likely, because Colorado had all the momentum in the world till they went to Lawrence and Kansas wiped them out. But I think this discussion is really emphasizing the point. This is a very interesting league. You started off with that premise, and you're right. And the reason it's interesting, I don't think there's any great teams in this league, but there's about 12 that are pretty good, that are, you know, good enough on the best day to beat the other ones and even wander out of the conference and do some damage. So the league is really intriguing, but I still just don't see that marquee team that's going to be a contender for the national championship. They're going to get their champion in, of course, automatically. And I think they've got a chance because with all the teams we've mentioned, we've probably highlighted 8 or 9 of the teams here in just this brief discussion. I think any one of those teams, a Kansas State, a Kansas, Utah, as Kai just mentioned, who was picked very highly last year going into the season and had a disappointing year. I don't think BYU is going to be as good. You mentioned they've got 4 quarterbacks contending for the job. Well, that's only because their returning quarterback is now gone. Retzlaff bailing out of BYU late in the process here. And he's another example of why the transfer portal is an absolute joke, because he did the same thing as the player last year that was that left Syracuse by going into the registrar's office and saying, I'm pulling out of here. I'm not going to go to school here anymore. The next day, he kind of had to.
I mean, he was going to be suspended for 7 games.
Well, that's true.
I want to play. So,
yeah. So, but the point was, he didn't have to go through the transfer portal. He just pulled out of school, went to Miami, registered the next day. And the NCAA said, well, if a guy leaves school and registers somewhere else, we don't have any control of that. So, Retzlaff now gone. There's a guy coming in for BYU. I was just reading about this morning. That's one of the most heralded prospects coming out of high school, but he's got to go on his 3-year mission first before he's eligible to play, which is just another head scratcher how they do business. Of course, they can still give him $1.5 million just to sign on the dotted line before he goes off and does missionary work. So there's some really interesting twists in this league, but I still say that so many of these teams are on kind of the same level that it's going to be a fascinating league to follow.
Also can't have a caffeinated drink till after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which is kind of strange.
Real quick, you know, I hate that Case is missing this because I really wanted to ask him about the K-State-Kansas rivalry and the fact that his beloved alma mater is 4-16 in the last 20 games against K-State. But I just wanted to point that out as a useless Tony Curry fact for the day. Even though Case wasn't here.
I have another one for you too, by the way. Arizona State, everyone talking about the success they had last year. The teams they beat last year were 13-32 in conference play.
Wow.
So Arizona State beat the shit out of all the bad teams last year. So it just was one of the years of a 13-32 in conference play. Arizona State obviously got to give them what they have, but they played really lousy football teams last year. And a lot of that looks at that. Hey, before we move on too, and we all like to dabble in the gambling kind of thing, and I want to get into it just a little bit. I like to throw out some things because a lot of people, info@TonyCurryRadio.net here on the TKR app and also, of course, on the Coastal Radio Network all up and down the East Coast. A lot of people really dig our show because they know we're gamblers and they like to hear information like, should I ever buy off the 4 or should I ever take +4 or should I ever try to, you know, middle a bet or whatever like that. We'd like to throw out some information out there that perhaps you can use. And I think it's really interesting when you're talking about stuff like that, because a lot of people like to look at the best teams and how they're going to perform during the season, where a lot of people like to look at the worst teams and bet against them. And Kip, we actually had an email question. Are you looking? You always say you don't bet on 2 turds. If you got 2 teams that are 4-8, leave it alone. There's a reason why they're 4-8. They lose games they're not supposed to, and they're going to break your heart. But do you, I know some people will look at the bottom 5 or bottom 10 teams of college football every week, and they'll just take the other side. What's your thoughts on that? Do you like to play with the big boys or do you like to go against the bad ones?
You know, it just depends. I mean, if you, you know, I wouldn't rule out looking at a game between two teams with bad records, because if you do some research and find out the way teams are losing and who they're losing to, a lot of times the win-loss record is kind of irrelevant. You know, it's an interesting dynamic, I think, in all of the realms of college football, is that the whole argument right now that the Big Ten is making for their four automatic qualifiers is the fact they play one more conference game. And, you know, if you look at strength of schedule, a lot of times I thought the whole prediction that Indiana was going to have no chance last year at Notre Dame in that first playoff game is because their schedule was so bad that I don't care if they're 11-1. Conversely, if you look at some teams at the bottom of conference standings, you know, there's some teams that are pretty decent that don't have decent win loss records because they do play a real tough strength of schedule, and teams that are competitive in those games but still come up on the losing end when they play a legitimately bad team with a similar record. I think some of those betting opportunities stand out because it's a chance for those teams to shine. Now, you make a good point, Tony, in the fact that if a team's on a losing skid, no matter who they play week to week, they seem to play down a lot of times to the competition, or play up as the case might be. So I you know, it's a tough question for me, but you know, in college football, I think you've got to really stay away from getting obsessed with win-loss records, because let's look at the gauntlet we've been talking about. Penn State, and I know we're not talking about the Big Ten today, but they're a perfect example as they open with Murderers Row this year, taking on Nevada, Florida International, and Villanova to start their year. I can just hear a commenter going, undefeated Penn State today goes into Michigan State, putting their 3-0 record on the line. That 3-0 record is an absolute joke.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to get into the National Football League. We'll have Case on the show coming up on Fridays. By the way, we do the show every Tuesday and Friday, 10 o'clock Central Time down here. We're down here in the Birmingham, Alabama area, of course, talking big SEC football. And we'll get into some NFL coming up here on Friday. I also want to kind of give you guys just a little bit of homework, not to say you're going to have to work hard on it, but there were only two teams in the top 10 last year, preseason top 10, that just didn't show up, and that was Michigan and FSU. And based off the season they had, obviously, the year before, you would have thought they'd play better. I want to get like two or three teams that are looking in your preseason top 10 that could fall out of the top 25, or perhaps a couple of teams that could fall in to the top 10 at the end of the year. And we'll do that coming up on Friday right here on the K4 Wins. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Go to our site, get all of our plays. We get after it every single week. Let's get into some Major League Baseball right now. We have the Jays, the Tigers, and the Stros, the Mets, the Brewers, and the Dodgers leading the league when it comes to wild card action. The Yanks, the Mariners, the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Phils, and San Diego, who got a big win last year. I think last night was the only game I think I hit in Major League Baseball last night. I think I doubled up on it. But Major League Baseball, let's go with Kai. He's always got his fingers on the pulse of what's going on in Major League Baseball. With about 55 games left, 56 games left, season's flying by, man.
All right, I got to reverse back again, though, because I got to disagree with Kip right there. Real quickly, back on football, jump in. Major League Baseball, the same way that leads in. I made a lot of money because, you know, I like totals, especially in football. I made a lot of money betting against horrible defenses and betting on the team totals of the other team, Miami, West Virginia, Vanderbilt's overs, you know, some of those, which other surprise teams, but just, you know, just to give a few, Wake Forest, I mean, betting the overs on Louisville, SMU, some of those teams, looking forward to it again. Baseball, got to give it up, Kip. I was emailing back with one of our subscribers, told him, I was like, man, I'm just going to post Kip's plays. I mean, he's 11-4 the last 3 days, and that's with a 3-2 day yesterday where I think one of his totals lost and one of his totals won. And no favorite over like 130. And it's just great. I mean, we gave out Major League Baseball 10 series on the show. We went 7-3 on our series plays. So 20-10 last week, 587 and 326 year to date. Like I said, Kip's last 3 days, just his plays. We may just post those. 11-4. We talked about it, and it kind of goes with this. You know, I've always said, and I've been very careful. We've talked to our subscribers. We've talked on this show. You guys talk about it. I'm very careful with Major League Baseball. The 10 days leading up to the All-Star break, until really about five games after the trade deadline to see who's doing what, who really wants it. I mean, who it affects. Like for Boston, Jaren Duran's not playing great right now, but how could he be with 2 weeks before the All-Star break comes, huge trade rumors about him being traded out of Boston. I do not think that's going to happen. I don't think it was ever serious, but it is something that's going on there. So I would encourage everybody to be very cautious until about five games after the trade deadline, whether they're, you know, watching us, talking to us or anybody. I always play smaller units. If you're $100 better, then cut it down and bet $25. I mean, you're not getting rich betting $100 a game anyway, whether you go 4-1, 3-2, 5-0 every day. So why not bet $25? Don't get on a bad run. Don't get yourself in a hole. Wait, see what's coming. You know who has the longest losing streak in Major League Baseball right now?
Houston Tony? Astros.
Yes, Houston Astros. Five games.
Yeah.
Five games.
Yeah.
That's not horrible, but still, they were just, you know, killing it. But who has the longest winning streak, and what is it?
It's not long.
Well, the Mets had seven until last night when they got walked off in the ninth, but I'm not sure who the current one is.
Imagine this. It's only three games. So I mean, again, I'm going back to what we're talking. And the three games, the teams that are tied, okay, San Diego, okay, they went through. Pittsburgh, Washington, and Baltimore.
How about that?
It's not like it's the greatest teams in the world. And you go and look at some of these stuff, the NL West, the AL Central, the AL East, the AL West, all only had one team in their last 10 games with winning records. It was Colorado at 6-4 out of the NL West. The Chicago White Sox.
How about those White Sox?
Okay, so everybody's like, wait, what? And then you've got the AL East, Texas, and then the AL West. I mean, AL East, Toronto, and AL West, Texas. So there are a lot of teams that it's just that time. And in all reality, the Colorado Rockies and the Chicago White Sox players are playing to be traded to a contender. That's what these guys are doing right now.
Yeah, every night, man, they're catching 200, 300 plus 335. I mean, it's crazy. And why not? Because all you got to do is win one of those three games and you're going to make your money back. And you know, a lot of people, I know some people will go, well, the Yankees are going to win 100 games, so I'm just going to bet them every single night. If you would do that and look over it, you're going to lose. You're going to lose money. You're going to lose money.
Because right now, nobody's playing worse than they are. They're terrible now.
You need to find those off nights where they lose ball games and make sure you're not on them and then be on them in those winning nights. And that's why we post a lot of minus 110, 120, 130 plays. We don't go up to 200. We will. But there's nothing worse than having a 5-1 night and then losing $180 and it ends up taking two of your bets, which kind of sucks. I was glad you brought that up, too, because – it is just it's dog days of summer. It's getting towards the end of summertime. It's hotter than hell. My son was at the St. Louis Cardinals game the other night. It was 108 degrees on the field. His cousin ended up getting a heat stroke. So she was puking her brains out. And these baseball players, I mean, I know they're making millions of dollars and they drink all the Gatorade and bubblegum they want during, you know, innings and everything else. But these guys, getting towards the end of the year, man. I mean, you still got 55 games left. You go into 2/3 of the season, and it's just hotter than hell. And everyone's looking forward to it cooling off a little bit and feeling more like the field of dreams than the field of hot lava out there every single time you go on a baseball field. So I think you're starting to see that a lot. I think that's why you're probably like seeing a lot of teams that aren't running up a lot of winning streaks. But I fully expect the Astros to come back a little bit. I have not been on this baseball team until this year for some reason. And every time I look, they look like the play, but I'm also getting a minus $120, minus $115, and I'll take that shot. I'll take that shot every single time. I'm always looking forward in the second half of the season to St. Louis Cardinals, who I hate because it's where my ex used to live, and they used to screw me every single time. I don't care. When I played St. Louis, they'd lose, and when I played against them, they'd win. I mean, every single time when I try to give them love, they never gave it back to me, but they always seem to get hot in the second half of the season. You look at my Cincinnati Reds. I can't wait till Green comes back. You know, you mentioned the Pittsburgh Pirates too, man. When you have like a guy like Skeens, who may be 4-12, but when you got a stopper, when you got a guy that can stop your losing streaks, that's huge. That's huge. When you've got just one guy in your rotation who can stop those losing streaks, that's a big time. That's a big time buzz killer for the other side. So when you're losing two or three games, but you know you get Skeens every other night, that's a big time play. Right now, the Cincinnati Reds are feeling that. Gosh, if they could just get some bats, man. And a lot of people are saying they're going to go out and find a bat. They need a bat bad. If they could get a bat, that'd be fantastic. I would love that. Atlanta Braves, how are your Bravos doing, by the way, real quick, Kip?
Well, you see what hat I'm wearing.
Yeah.
Make the Atlanta Braves great again. I broke this out in 2016. I got it back out just for your guys' entertainment today. They won last night 10-7. It was just an aberrant game. The Royals pitching staff walked 12 Braves in the game. Wow. So a couple of home runs left the building with guys on base that had walked. It was just a garbage game. I liked under the 10.5 9.5 last night in that game. And even as late as the eighth inning, it was still kind of lurking at 7-8. And then the last two at bats for both teams, it just went crazy. But the Royals are not, they're only three games below 500, and watching them last night, I don't see much to be impressed with at all. They do have Bobby Witt, who's just a tremendous young player, and some other good cogs. This Garcia kid, who I really didn't know much about, he went like 4-for-5 last night, and he had a hustle double despite the pitch before. I don't know if you guys have seen the video. He starts, you know, like batting around something on his neck. You can see a bee land on him and crawl down into his jersey and was stinging the hell out of him. And the next next pitch, he just hit a base hit to right, but he is so pissed off or still running from the bee, he just rounded first and dug into second for a hustle double. So that was the highlight of the game. But the Braves are just, I don't know. They're going to, last night, Marcell Ozuna actually hit a home run. That's probably his curtain call, because he will definitely be dealt with his .230 batting average. I think he's over the hill. Whoever gets him and hopes that he revives and gives them a DH with some power. He does have that, but he is really kind of showing signs of being done. And the last 2 years, what the Braves got out of him, I declared him pretty much yesterday's news a couple of seasons ago. So for the fact they got such production out of him the last couple of years, he's going to be gone. They're probably going to dump a couple of their decent relief pitchers. Pierce Johnson, I'm sure, is highly sought after, a guy with strikeout capabilities with a great curveball. They've got a couple other bullpen pieces. I look for them to dump just about everything they can possibly dump here. I don't think they're going to get rid of any of their high profile players, because they got them all locked up at decent rates. But this team is really a disaster, and they don't have a single member of their original starting five rotation now. With Grant Holmes getting hurt this weekend in his start, down
that
in
Texas. Do it too, man. I mean, you got to give him. You got to give him a pass, man. When their starting lineup, their rotations has been banged up.
Yeah, they don't have a single. They don't have a single pitcher from opening day, their top five rotation, currently active. So that's hard to overcome, and I give them that excuse. But it's when those guys were in and pitching, the offense was so inconsistent. They've got so many guys having really bad years, striking out at an alarming rate. They're just a dumpster fire. I don't know what Anthopoulos does, but this year, of course, is a washout. My good friend in Atlanta, Steve Hardy, former basketball great at Coastal Carolina, it texted me a couple years ago, the last year before the Braves started this run of playoff appearances, and said, "Kiefer, what are they doing? They're trading everybody that's any good." And I said, "Hardy, this is a throwaway season. They're preparing for the future. They're dumping everybody." And I'll never forget what he texted back. He calls himself Hardball. He says, "Throwaway season with about five question marks. Hardball doesn't have that many seasons left." So I really thought that was funny. But he's going to have to relive that nightmare, because they're going to dump everybody they can possibly get any prospects for in the next 2 days.
They are.
I got a trivia question for you, Kip. How many teams are further out of the wild card race than the Braves in Major League Baseball?
I would say only probably two.
Are you talking about the National League?
Baseball.
All of baseball. Period. Yeah, I would say.
Four teams.
I was going to say, yeah.
The White Sox.
Yep. Rockies.
The Rockies. The Nationals and the Pirates by one game.
Wow. And the Nationals are about to catch them. The Marlins have blown right by them. So the Braves aren't, it's not like they're limping in third place. There's a good chance they're going to end up at the bottom of the division, which is pretty stunning for a team that's been to the playoffs 7 years in a row.
It's hard to believe. Yeah, and it really is. They're 12 games out of the wild card right now, and that's just too much. I mean, when you're talking about 12 games, it doesn't sound like a lot. You can make up 12 games, and not when you have to jump over 15 teams to get there.
Snitker needs to go. They need to make sweeping changes to get this back, because they had so much momentum. They still sell out every game. And you, Kai, I know you notice this. Tony, you also, because you guys scrutinize this every day. Isn't it unbelievable how often? I think the Braves were like a 170 favorite last night. I mean, the Braves are always favorite, and they suck. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's because they've been so damn good for so long, and people are still on paper, it still looks like they're a better baseball team than who they're normally playing. I mean, it really is.
And it's, on this show,
Vegas is not stupid. I mean, just point blank, they know who people are going to bet on. The Braves,
that's true.
I mean, it's just like here, even when Alabama was not good, you know, between like 93 and 2008 here, or 94 and 2008. Everybody in Alabama still bets on Alabama. Auburn fans still bet on Auburn. Alabama has become one of the favorites to bet on over the last 25 years.
Sure.
Okay, granted, see why. The Braves have been one of those teams. The Yankees, the Dodgers, that's who people bet on. The Lakers, those big market teams, that's who people bet on. That's the reason why Vegas does the things they do. And, you know, Tony, back to your point of who you could bet on. Okay, so the Yankees, you said they're going to get to 100 wins, right? Well, they're sitting at 57-49. How often are they -180, -220?
Every night.
If you bet against the Yankees every game, you're making money. Same thing with the White Sox. Okay, how often do we see them +300? They're 39-68 right now. If they're just +200, then their winning record, they're at 78/68.
Yes,
up 10 units, because I think they've been favored in 4 games this year. So you look at the Rockies. They're 28-78.
What's amazing about the Rockies, too, is because you play out in Colorado, you play on Denver, you don't know what the hell is going to happen out there, man. You could have a 10-9 game every single night of the week. And that's why you think to yourself, okay, because even bad pitchers can find some luck out in Colorado, and even good pitchers can get drilled out there. That's why you think to yourself, okay, if I'm going to have a franchise that's 50 games below 500, which they are right now, 28-78, at least we're playing in Colorado where dreams could happen. You know what I mean? Who knows? One night, you know, just a great pitcher comes in and gets shelled because of that light air.
Hey, Tony, I got one more stat for baseball that we've gone over every week. I apologize for interrupting you there. So, and the first one is just to dig into to Kip a little bit harder. So remember Friday, we were talking about the Braves. With a losing record, they were still +4 runs, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now, after the weekend, they're -20 runs. So after Friday until now, that's how many runs they've been outscored by. But you've only got two teams, one with a winning record that has a negative run differential. Anybody got a guess?
That would be the St. Louis Cardinals.
Correct. -2 runs only at 55 and 53. One team is left in Major League Baseball with a positive run differential with a losing record.
I only know this because I played them last week against the Diamondbacks.
That is correct. 51 and 56, and they're +3 runs.
Wow.
Yeah, you've got me looking at that run differential a lot more. I used to never look at that line, and now I'm looking at it a lot more because there's something to it. Because by the end of the year, it will – if you have a winning record, you will be plus, and if you have a losing record, you'll be minus. It's just that's the way it plays out. Hey, I wanted to get you guys' thoughts. We have about 5 or 10 minutes here left. This Christian Wilkins situation, only because when I was doing morning radio, this was kind of my foray. This is the stuff I love to talk about because it's human nature, it's culture, it's why did he do that? It's really strange locker room behavior. In case you missed the story, Christian Wilkins with the Las Vegas Raiders evidently was being cut. He was, of course, with the Miami Dolphins for 5 years. Good defensive player. I think he had 9 sacks last year, the year before, and had a huge guaranteed deal. And we can't find video on it. I look for it, but evidently kissed someone on the top of the head in, I guess it was the locker room. I guess it was after a practice. I'm not sure what was happening. But he kissed somebody on the head, and it just kind of took everyone's breath away, I guess, to the point where whoever got kissed in the head ended up going to HR and reporting this guy. And I'm thinking to myself, am I missing something here? You guys have been in locker rooms. I've been in locker rooms my entire life. There's towel swapping. There's smacking going on. There's all kinds of shit that goes on in a men's locker room. I got news for you. And kissing some dude on the top of the head is not one of them.
Nobody wants to get kissed by a gay guy. I mean, point blank. I don't care. I get it. And, you know, I'm not politically correct anyway. And Kip's much closer to Case and everything out there. And allegedly, I mean, I don't
know. Do we know Christian's gay? Do we know Christian's gay?
He is openly gay. He has come out. He came out of the closet a long time ago when he was in college. I mean, yes, he is. So, okay. I mean, you can Google it. You can look it up. So I do think that is, you know, that's probably the last straw, if you will. With what was going on with him not rehabbing, not doing all the things that they wanted to do. But, I mean, bottom line, I really don't care who it is. I mean, I don't think it's homophobic for that. And if, you know, somebody wants to cancel me because I'm saying this, okay, so be it. I mean, that's just me. I'm going to be honest. You know, Tony, you've probably kissed me on the head during our 25 years of drunken debauchery out there, allegedly, you know, and that's different. But it's a teammate that has not been with them a super long time. Some of the guys may be new. We don't know who it was. I mean, you know, just maybe don't do it. You know, there's playing, and I'm sure that was playing. It's probably totally innocent. But at the same time, people don't want to see it.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of the Richie Incognito days. And I can remember the culture, the subculture that went along with that and the gay / don't tell anybody / it's a locker room. We're all men. It doesn't matter whether you're gay or not, guys, because we can do the math, folks. Believe it or not, there are three Alabama players that are gay. There are three Alabama football players that are gay.
Sure.
Do the math. I mean, they have to be. They're, out of 120 guys, there are probably at least three guys, and no one wants to say they are because this is football. We got to be rough and tough. But some of the so I can go back and we can't go through a list of gay players who played hellacious football. There's some great football players out there that I'm sure are gay. Why this guy kissed him on the head, I mean, maybe it was just the last straw. Maybe he was just trying to get at the guy. It's just amazing to me because when you talk about – listen, I did a show for 20 years with a guy who did 20 years in the National Football League, and then Jay Barker, who was about as clean as it possibly gets. And the stories I heard about what happened in locker rooms, whether you're gay or not, this ain't one of them. So this for someone to actually call HR on this thing, I just was like, what? Is this actually a story? And I'm not sure how that paints – the Las Vegas Raiders. Kip, do you have any thoughts on this? Because you've been in plenty of locker rooms too. It doesn't matter whether you're gay, straight, bisexual, homo. It doesn't matter. When you're in a locker room, you're one of the football guys. You're a football guy.
Doesn't matter.
You do what you say.
I mean, here's my take on it. I've seen more ridiculous things than that in locker rooms.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is when you got a guy, and Kai's absolutely right, Wilkins has been out for quite a while, and if you've got a guy on the team, and he was that last year was his first year with the team, everybody in the locker room knows that this guy has a different proclivity, let's say, in his sexual preferences. So your radar is kind of activated all the time. Anything he does is going to stand out a lot more than just idiot guys doing stupid things, playing different pranks. And a lot of them could be you could put a lot of the things that go on in a locker room in kind of the perverted column or aberrant behavior column, but it's written off because they know guys are just being guys. But if a gay guy is in the locker room, they're already kind of on guard. And if he does anything, I don't think this guy even files, whoever the kissee was, I don't think he even files a grievance against Wilkins if he's, you know, not, doesn't have that label and is not admittedly a gay individual. I think the fact he doesn't have the latitude to just fool around with the guys, unfortunately. And that's kind of a sad indictment of society. You know, it football is the ultimate macho universe. And so I think that's a big part of the deal. But yeah, the Raiders, as I was talking to you guys before the show, have been expressing complete dissatisfaction with the fact that Wilkins, after his surgery, was supposed to start his rehab late last year and has been very slow to adhere to the guidelines and all the requirements that the medical staff and the training staff for the Raiders have been trying to get him to do. And at the end of the day, as sordid as this story is trying to become, it just comes down to what it always comes down to: money. $83 million of his $110 million free agent contract was guaranteed. The Raiders see an opportunity now to charge breach of contract and get out of having to pay that money and write off a guy that now they are considering a mistake to have signed, because he's not fitting in with the team, he's not playing because of his injury, and he's not working hard to get back. There's even talk that, you know, he's gone to some doctors who are calling for an additional surgery. So that would put him out another year. The Raiders just want out. And I don't think the kiss scandal has anything to do with it. I think he was a goner no matter what.
No, I think you're right. This certainly does not bode well for him for his next football team, because I don't know anyone that wants to bring him on board, homophobic or not. And you're right.
Oh, there'll be revolts in locker rooms. Let's say your Bengals say, hey, we can sign Christian Wilkins, and I guarantee you half the team's going to be in the general manager. We don't want him here.
If he's TJ Watt, kiss me on the head, bring it on. But he's not. And I know, I think he had 9 sacks last year, the year before. He got an $86 million guaranteed contract. The guy's a great football player, period. And now they're trying to get $34 million of that as much. By the way, guarantee doesn't mean guaranteed anymore. Evidently, I used to always think guaranteed is you got guaranteed money. It's in the bank. No, he's probably going to have to give back $34 million of that just because he's not doing his job. But again, the guy has not, I don't think it has anything to do with the kiss. I think it has to do with the fact that he's not being one of the guys. He's not doing what he needs to do to get back on the football field. And he's sitting and he's probably getting fat, and a lot of people probably don't like that. And I think it's interesting because you see these guys talk one way, they act one way. And again, I've been in a ton of locker rooms, not as a player, but I've seen it, been there, done that. And all of a sudden, some dude kisses some guy at the top of the head, and it's like, whoa, hey, you know, we can beat our wives and beat our girlfriends up, throw them in elevators and shit. We can do all that now.
But a gay guy,
kissing me at the top of my head,
that's over the line.
That's way over the line. That is, I'm reporting that to HR right now. I mean, it's like, come on, are you serious? I guess you'd have to be the guy who got kissed on top of the head. Maybe the guy who he kissed is also gay. Maybe they're dating. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. We're gonna
That was no freeze up. That was us going, the hell is Tony saying?
K4wins.com. Yes, and by the way, I have kissed Guy and I've kissed Kip. I think I've given you a hug and nice. My dad, when I used to go to bed at night when I was a little young, a little whippersnapper, my dad would put his hands out like this, and I put my hands in between and he'd slap my hands. And that's what we did. And I'd give my mom a kiss on the cheek. And then as I got a little older, he started giving me, and my dad was not a huggy kind of person. We just didn't do that in our family. And then by the time, you know, he passed away from cancer and stuff, we were full force, man. I was hugging him and giving him a kiss on the cheek, and he kissed me back. And it was just one of those mafia things, man, where you just, you know, you kissed your friends, because, and I don't kiss a lot of friends. I don't. I have to love you a lot and I really appreciate what you're all about to do that. But I think it takes a real man, a real heterosexual man, by the way, to do that.
Well,
with that being said,
Coastal Sports.
We just boosted their numbers. That being said, they don't have gay people down in Florida. Okay. With that being said, we're not in a locker room, and you guys' heads are a good 15 or 20 miles away from my lips, so we're good to go. All right, we'll get back into it. Coming up on Friday, we're going to talk about some NFL. I want you guys to look at the preseason top 10. Give me 2 to 3 teams you think aren't going to be there at the end of the season, and 2 or 3 teams that aren't there now that you think perhaps could be there at the end of the season. We'll get in that, plus the National Football League, and I believe Case will be back live from Las Vegas Sun. He'll be joining us again 10 o'clock coming up on Friday morning show, 10 o'clock Central. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Check out our website at K4Winners on X. We'll get after it. And special thanks to Pete Shepard, of course, Angel, the entire Coastal Sports Network. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.